folks. Welcome to another edition of the Cornerstone Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Koval, recording in the WGN studio on what feels like a spring day in the city of Chicago. We are in early March, and sometimes it seems like a miracle when the sun comes out for more than 5 minutes or so, and we're on a pretty good run right now in the city and up in the spaceship at WGN Radio. Glad to be here. Glad to be back with you. Max Snackdoor is enjoying a sizable salad as we speak. Mercedes is running a little bit late because, you know, she does shit in the world. And DJ Cashier is actually fulfilling another role of hers as the official DJ of Louder Than a Bomb, the Chicago Youth Poetry Festival, which is in its second week of preliminary bouts. I want to put on your radar that March 21st is the finals, the team finals, the culminated event for the 20th year of the Chicago Youth Poetry Festival is at the Cadillac Palace Theater. It's a Saturday night. Please come out, get your tickets and all information at youngchicagoauthors.org. It's a festival we do now for 20 years in the city of Chicago, gathering young creatives and artists and important voices, rappers, poets, MCs from all over the city. Each spring we do this event, and if you care about youth culture, if you care about what young people in the city have to say, it's an event that I think you'll really appreciate being at. Team Finals, Louder Than a Bomb, is at the Cadillac Palace Theater, March 21st. Today, in studio, we have just such a talented visual artist, painter, curator, and organizer of cultural spaces, someone who I deeply admire the work. And I'm excited to talk about how to categorize the work, because I have some theories and some ideas, but so happy to have in the space, in the building, the week before, a few days before his incredible solo show at Vertical Gallery opens, we have David Ha in the building. David, welcome.
Hey, thanks.
Yo, thank you, man. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, that was such a nice gas up.
You already know I'm a fan.
No, me too. But also, on that note, people go to LTAB. I went for the first time last year, and it's fucking great. It's good.
Thank you. We got to get you back out.
Yeah, no, actually, it's good. I was genuinely surprised to see young kids kill it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, my expectation going in there is like, when I was that age, I'd probably suck. And then they killed it, and I was pleasantly surprised. So if you haven't gone, go.
Thank you for that. I definitely sucked at that age. So, as just a person and in life, and certainly as a writer. Yeah. So it is kind of amazing. I think that they continue to defy my expectations for the last 20 years. Yeah. I'm always pretty amazed about what you get. Before we go anywhere, Max does his job, and he takes it seriously as the snack door of the corner store, meaning he secures snacks for our guests. Today, Max has gotten you a few things. One, an incredible Topo Chico mineral water.
Like it. Yeah, wow, thank you.
And this is a first in corner store history. Max has gotten for you a pint of half-baked Ben and Jerry's chocolate vanilla ice cream mixed with gobs of chocolate chip cookie dough and fudge brownies. Amazing. Ben and Jerry's, cut that check, maybe? I mean, maybe we could get that Ben and Jerry's money. Oh, we get that Ben and Jerry's cream. And feel free to dig in. We like not only sound effects, but also ice cream. So that
I didn't want it to be like some weird ASMR of me eating.
No.
Nasty as fuck.
No, that's good. I think people will enjoy it. Maybe too much. So,
I'm a little worried about that. Sweet tooth. I love all things sweet.
Well, and you said you hadn't, you haven't had much to eat today.
No. This is my first meal of the day, pretty much.
Oh, wow. Okay. Embarrassing. I want to talk about a lot of things, but just even to that, what did you do today? Like, what, how's your day been so far?
Oh man, funny part is I actually ran into Max this morning. I usually just get coffee first thing in the morning. I get a coffee, a small coffee and espresso.
Max might have been going through your garbage because he, in order to do his job as a snack tour, he takes the research very seriously. That's so funny. He could have been maybe low key stalking you.
No, he did good, dude. But my day, let's see. Like you were saying, dude, it's nice out, and it's like, I feel obligated that when it's nice, I have to go do stuff outside, mostly errand day and shit, and I also like to walk a lot more when it's nice. Like, every day, I usually start my day by, like, showering, getting dressed, all that shit, but I need to, like, spend 15 to 20 minutes away from, because I work at home, my studio's in my apartment, so every day now, I just, like, go walk, go get coffee, smoke, think about my day, come back, and I'm ready to work. So when it's nicer, I just take the long way, and then, I don't know, just people watch, and I don't know, shake things up, maybe get like a bagel or something. But Yeah. And then that's about it. Like, woke up, saw him, talked, did errands, came here, got lost.
Are you still, you have a solo show at Vertical mm-hmm. Gallery, mm-hmm. called
Honey and Smoke.
I'm so excited to see it. Everything I've seen from the show thus far, always is really stunning. Big pieces mm-hmm. in the gallery. Mm-hmm. Are you still making work for the show, or are you pretty much
I'm done?
Okay.
Yeah. Oh no. I'm like a pretty type A person, and I hate feeling rushed and frazzled. So I had like all of February to like really finish up most of the works. But do you remember that like 2 weeks where it was like super shitty out, and it like snowed a lot, and then the residual 5 days was like awful. So that's like when I buckled down and I finished two paintings. I made like four collages that week because I had nothing else to do. Like, I wasn't going to go outside. And so I finished early, and I actually thought I was a good stopping place. And I finished about 2 weeks earlier than I planned for myself. So now I've just been chilling, hanging out with Patrick, double checking everything and like finessing all the details. But yeah, feel pretty good.
I'm excited to talk about the show, and I want to get there. Before we go any further, though, as people are listening, maybe they could follow along and see some of what we're talking about via your IG.
Oh, wow.
What's the best place where people can
see? My handle is DAVHEO. It's not Dav. It's just the shorter thing of David. I hate when people go up to me and they're like, are you Dave? Are you Dav? I'm like, that's not even a real fucking name, dude. Like, just David.
Dav. Yeah,
and I'm like, what the fuck? But yeah, that's my handle.
Word. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So go there, because I think it'll provide some context for what we're talking about. And I want to talk about Honey and Smoke, but let's go back and just, you know, kind of find out how we even got to this point. You're from where?
I'm from Acworth, Georgia. It's about like 30 minutes northeast of Atlanta. Let's see. Stayed there until like the end of high school. After high school, I moved here about almost 10 years ago this August, which is wild. Like, I've almost now lived here half the time I was born and raised in Georgia.
Yeah. But can we talk a little about Georgia? Because I don't know. Obviously, I know Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I don't know the town specifically. Is it a bigger town, small town?
It's a smaller town. I mean, to give you context, like, aside from my brother and maybe like two other people at my high school, there's only like four or five Asian people in my high school.
Yeah.
It's predominantly white and black. It's kind of like, it's not rural. It's not like fuck nowhere, but it's definitely not like a place of culture. I mean, there was like a military station very close to my high school. So people that graduated would just like sign up for it. You know, it's like that kind of place.
Right. That's like a viable option out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like, there's just like a lot of friends I knew are mechanics now or garage people. A lot of them served. But it's like one of those places. It wasn't like really good for me, A, racially, and B, just creatively. I felt like once, like towards the senior year of my high school, I was so ready to get the fuck out, you know? And then I chose Chicago because it's a good city. It's not as hyped as New York and LA. It's a lot more affordable. And I knew shit about it before I moved here. I just heard that it was like really windy. But then, and then I like understood like where that really came from. But
did you come to go to school? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to SAIC for my undergrad, which is ironic because I went there for my grad, but I was like the shittiest student. And then stayed pretty much. Yeah.
Right. So in high school, mm-hmm. or I guess in Georgia, mm-hmm. I wonder, this is a theory. Mm-hmm. If you're one of the only kids in your ethnic group, I imagine that sometimes feels like an isolating experience.
Mm-hmm.
Are your parents from there?
Or? Mm-mm. So they both immigrated at different times and met in the States. They met in a Chinese restaurant in Texas. And the only reason why they moved to Georgia, I had asked, was because my dad's like, it's the most practical place to live. It's like free of natural disasters.
He's on some like he was research
like,
shit.
Like very practical, but he didn't account for the fact that like he would raise non-white kids in a white area. And
which is some like immigrant ass mm-hmm, thing to do mm-hmm, mm-hmm. because you just don't yeah, really
it was like
account,
a, pra- how it was a practical
know?
Thing. Like cost yes. of living was really cheap. So to my parents, it made sense to like settle down there. And it's a good place to like have family. Like it's super open and there's like a lot of nature and wilderness. And like I had a pretty good childhood, like for the most part.
Siblings?
Yeah, I have one older brother. He's coming to my show.
Great.
Which is so exciting. It's the first time he'll see my work in like a gallery context.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's seen my shit around. And like,
is he in Georgia or where is
he's in Florida now.
Okay.
But
that's great.
Yeah, no, it's super exciting because, like, to my brother, like, I don't think he like likes my work how people like it. To him, it's just like, oh, this is shit my brother does. You know what I'm saying?
He's gonna bug out.
I think so.
He will bug out when he sees it, not only in the context, but also I'm sure, you know, just I'm sure he's obviously peeping online, but to be in front of it in the, you know, in the amount of work that you've done in this beautiful space, and I know at the opening, the shit is gonna be packed.
I hope so. Oh, yeah, that'd be kind of embarrassing to me. My
you're gonna be fine. Right, so that's so the question I guess is is because it was an isolating experience in terms of race, is that what helped push you into a isolated kind of art form like
kind of
drawing, painting, and how did that come about?
I mean, like processing like a lot of my childhood and shit, like low key being Asian American, especially like East Asian American, is so strange because like there's this pressure for me to identify as a minority or passing, you know? And so like, I remember in high school, I wanted to be white so bad, but then I realized it's not that I wanted to be white. I just wanted the privileges. Like just, you know, like I got bullied a lot for my race and I'm just like, I can't control it, you know? And then there's this pressure to be like, do I identify as white or black? There's like no middle ground, you know? And that was like really hard. I remember that distinctly. And I got comfortable in my own skin after moving here for a while because, I mean, there's genuine visual diversity, but then also there's no pressure for me to, like, have to choose. And I think just, like, growing up in high school, dealing with that, and I wouldn't necessarily, like, say painting and drawing came from isolation. It was more so, like, I could do it anywhere. Like, I didn't have to be in a space specifically to make work. And so byproduct of me going back into painting was... after undergrad. In undergrad, I did a lot of printmaking. And then when I graduated, I was too broke to join facilities. So I started painting at home. And I think that's when I like got more into painting because, like I said, like you can just do it anywhere. And it's free of like requirements of like a real community or access to equipment. And yeah, I think that's like where it really came from. But
right. And, and we'll I mean, yeah, you, of course, used many different materials to compose your pieces. But I guess prior to coming to the city and deciding that you're going to explore art in an educational space, when did you begin to think of yourself as an artist in high school, in middle school? When did you start to take yourself a little bit seriously, even before you? Because to be like, yo, I'm going to go to the School of the Art Institute, you know more or less like you're this is something you're pursuing. But when you know, when earlier were you like, this is I am interested in this or identify this way?
So like, I guess going in a linear order, in high school, I knew I wanted to be an artist of some sort. I didn't really believe that I could be like a visual artist. And so I used to tattoo in high school thinking that's what I was going to do because like I could make shit, get paid, and I listen to stories and that's it. You know what I'm saying? Like that was like my train of thought. And then that's why I moved here originally because Chicago has such an amazing tattoo scene. And then
Do tattoo? I didn't even know you did that at all.
This is like the backstory to everything. Yeah. Like, that was like the shit that I was like really into. And then I moved here and no shop would take me as an apprentice because I was a full-time student. So my plan was like, all right, I'll just finish undergrad and then see what shop I get in. Finish undergrad. And I realized I didn't want to do it. And I was like, I don't even know the fuck to do with my life anymore. You know, because like, dude, SAIC is a great school, right? But for undergrads, it is the worst school. Like no shade to it. It's just like, I genuinely do not believe undergraduate art school should be a thing. Like, dude,
speak on it. I agree. And I've taught in many undergraduate art programs.
Like, I get it. Like, if I could go back and change one thing, I would have just gone to fucking state school and been a bro and then like made art my own time. You know, like it's just like, dude, it is way too much pressure to ask these kids, like me, including at the time, to make work that is important to them. Like that's impossible. Unless you've lived the craziest life prior to 18, you have no real source to pull work from. And then SAIC creates this like unspoken authoritative figure. Like your professor is who you seek validation for, so you're going to inherently make work that caters to their taste. So depending who the fuck your professors are, you're not going to make your own work for the longest time. And so like I said, I came from a tattooing background, and like most 18-year-old kids, they go to art school because they're fucking good at art, right? But you throw all these kids in the same building, nobody is special anymore. Like they're all very talented. And so I remember I struggled really hard my first year because all of my professors like make work that comes from a source, like concept. The idea of concept was new to me because all I did was like, oh, what do you want? I can render it, right? And no one did a really good job of nurturing this idea of like how to marry concept and technique. And so that's why when I was in grad school there, it's light years better for grad school because people go in it with the stakes of like, I'm going to do this, right? Like I'm going to take out another set of loans to like actually give it my all. And then the disheartening thing about that is that like, they don't really prepare you to even envelop the idea of what it means to be a working artist. You know, like I learned a bunch of flowery language. I'm very fucking articulate, but like for the most part, things I do now, I didn't learn in school. It's after school. So I would safely say I didn't take myself seriously until like 3 years ago. That's like when I decided to go back into grad school, you know, like 2016, because I was so tired of not having direction in my life that I decided I was like, I have to do this. Or if I fail this, I really don't know what to do. So my time in grad school was I set myself up differently, understanding how the fuck I failed in undergrad. And so I think that's why I was able to hit the ground running after I graduated grad school was because I did not want to fail anymore. And yeah. So,
well, you also have, I mean, the, you know, what I know of you and what I've seen certainly of your work, mm-hmm. you have a pretty voracious work ethic and you're very prolific when it comes to
my dad did that.
Yeah. Which, yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. What do your folks do?
So my mom's a housewife and my dad is a government contractor, but he runs his business all by himself. Like no sets, no secretary, no assistant, nothing. I remember growing up watching that and my dad was dead set that me and my brother would take over his business. And I was like, fuck that. That looks like way too much stress. But I think just watching him growing up and like wearing 6,000 hats to make his job work, to provide for me, my brother, my mom growing up is what inspired me like low key to like really hustle in the sense that I have to do everything in order to make myself succeed. That's like the kind of mentality it came from. But
I want to go back to something you said mm-hmm. about being in undergrad and,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Being introduced to the notion of concept.
Mm-hmm.
You had some technical skills coming in, but you were just rendering. You mm-hmm. were just making art about
yeah, I was
what
just drawing.
You were just drawing.
Yeah.
At what point? I mean, you have now mm-hmm. a pretty refined. You know, if I when I see a piece of yours, I know mm-hmm. it's yours, which
oh,
is
shit,
one of the
thanks,
things
dude.
That I love. You know what I mean? I'm uh-huh. like, this is David's work mm-hmm. very clearly. I think it's such at any point in an artist's career, I think that's very difficult to do.
Mm.
I think especially for someone who's so young,
thanks, dude.
That's, you know, at very, you know, ahead of a curve, I mm-hmm. guess.
Yeah.
But at what point did you start to realize that, oh, I'm making work that is intentional mm-hmm. and what is that intention?
Mm. Let's see. How do I answer this? I'm going to answer this question in like the most detailed way possible. So I think this is
great.
A very important question for
great.
Like any artist.
Agreed.
So in undergrad, it was not until like my last year that I started to grasp the idea of concept, the idea of like what was important to me. But at that point, it was like too late, dude. I was graduating in like 7 months. I was like, fuck, dude, what can I do? And I was so dissuaded from the idea of like art as profession that when I took the time off between undergrad and grad, I just lived my life. And then all of those experiences regurgitated in the format when I started grad school. Because in grad school, I knew I wanted to make work, but I didn't know necessarily what about. You know, and like my first 2 months, I was like, I'm going to make grandiose work about race, right? Like, you know, like my difference. And then that was stupid because all of my lived experiences is through the perception of my race. You know what I'm saying? So it's like inherently all of my lived experiences is with the understanding that I'm Asian American. And so from there, it really honed into the idea of like, all right, I guess I'll make kind of quasi autobiographical works. And so from that was like the seed that started all of the shit, though, that you've seen really came from my time after school, because the idea of like advising meetings went out the window, critiques went out the window, and I just had to trust what I was making. And I trust what I lived was good. Like, all I do not regret how I lived. And if I can translate moments of those things that were so resonant with me into these images, that's where it came along. And I think that's like this, I'm still definitely learning as I go, but like 2018, like towards the latter half, was like the real point of like, all right, I know at least the four things off the top of my head that I want to make work about for the rest of my life. And those things might, you know, change with age and stuff like that. But the concepts or the core of it all is definitely there right now.
So what are those four things?
Oh man, oh god, that was just a random number.
Okay, for sure.
One of my biggest interests is male dynamics. So my dad is he's very, like, you know, conservatively Korean. He immigrated during the 80s where Korea was extremely conservative. You know, it pretty much mimed the how we perceive 1950s America, like gender roles. So my dad abided by those. And then it did not help that he lived in Georgia, which is very conservative. So it kind of reinforced toxic masculinity. So, like, I love my dad. I know he meant well, but he did, like, pretty bad job of, like, grooming me and my brother as emotionally fulfilled men. And so that's, like, something of an interest of mine. It's kind of, like, the power dynamics between, like, males and the others, right? Wherever that means. So that's, like, core number one. Core number two is, like, I like seeing how people want to decompress, or, like, how they feel like they deserve something, right? So, we work hard, we play hard. So I investigate those things. Like, right now, dude, I'm like 27. So my play hard is, like, very childish, you know? And when I talk to, like, someone who's 65, like, what is leisure to them? Like, what is downtime to them?
What is that to you when you say you're childish in your leisure, like, time? Like, what do you...
You know those memes that are like, oh, I'm going to take the day off or some shit like that, but then you've been doing nothing for, like, 5 days in a row or some shit, whatever, like, lazy shit. To me, I think that's, like, the thing. And I love playing video games and shit.
Me too. And what kind of games you play?
I don't want to say it publicly.
Okay. Yeah. I also play, like, old man games. I play, like, I go to, like, the arcade.
Oh, dude, yeah, I suck at arcades. Okay. I get way too frustrated because it's, like, I'm like, pinball? Fuck that shit, dude.
Pinball is tough. Pinball is my dad's generation, and he beats my ass still.
Oh, my God.
I'm more of, like, a Arkanoid, Donkey Kong, Pac-Man, Galaga.
I also really love bowling.
Like, I love bowling.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah. But
we definitely all go bowling. Yeah,
and it's fun. Like, I'm not a very competitive person that way. But
are you good at bowling?
No, fuck no.
Okay,
I would not say I'm, like, excellent, but I do enjoy myself.
Yes.
You know?
If you don't enjoy bowling,
yeah,
you're kind of taking it too seriously.
Yeah. And it's like, dude, like, when I watch the clips of, like, professional bowlers, I'm just like, how are you this way, dude? I know. Like, you have there's a specific mood to professional bowlers.
Yeah, like, something has maybe gone wrong. Yeah.
But no, going back, those two topics, I know for sure are, like, there. And then if I had to choose two last ones to fulfill that four number, third one is I like seeing this, like, idea. Something I think about often is paradise an idea, or is it a feeling, right? So, like, is it this physical place, or is it something that we aspire to feel or fulfill? So that's something I think about too. And it goes tandem with, like, leisure culture, but it's like, there is no utopia. I feel like my utopia is very different from, like, you and Max's, right? And depending on your class, your social privilege, like, utopia is going to be very different. So that's something I slowly unpack in my work, but selfishly, it comes from my point of view. Like, I'm not going to make work that presents this notion and me speaking about all classes, because I don't know what that feels like. Like, I don't know what it really feels to be broke as fuck or rich as fuck and talk about what is utopia or paradise or the aesthetics of paradise to that, right? And fourth one, Honey and Smoke kind of covers it, but something I was really interested about with this idea of nightlife culture and leisure is I see it all the time with, like, my friends, my girlfriend, myself, and everything. It's kind of like, we want the best things for ourselves, but something either internally or externally sabotages it. So I'm, like, really interested in this idea, or if I see it, right? Like, oh, I deserve this or I want this, but I cannot. Whether you're anxious or the external circumstances don't allow you, like class or whatever. And so that's, like, something I've been trying to, like, talk about without being really heavy-handed. And I don't have, like, a clear, like, one sentence about it, but that's, like, the general idea of it.
And then, so these are conceptually what mm-hmm. you're bringing into the painting for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, you're working across materials,
yeah,
right? Because in your paintings on the canvas is also sometimes paper.
Mm-hmm.
What else gets thrown in the
let's
mix?
See. Grease pencil, crayon, colored pencil, oil stick, spray paint, like you said, construction paper, pencil. I don't know, just like a bunch of stuff that's around my hands.
Yeah, and how do you, is it just what's in the studio? Do you bring for a particular piece?
It's more so just like, it came from two reasons. A, in grad school, I was pretty poor, right? Like, I couldn't afford to buy, like, the best pencils or the best paints for sure, you know? And that's how I even got into house paint. I was, like, way too broke to afford, like, good acrylic paints. but I was expected to make a shit ton of work because it's grad school. And then I got into like crayons and color pencil byproduct because it's cheaper, but also I remember like using it when I was like super young. Like it was a material familiarity, which was really nice because it's funny. The more educated I get, I genuinely think my work starts sucking because I overthink a lot of things now. Like, you know, like when I try to make a gestural mark now, it's so different than when I was like five. When I was five, I just made the damn mark and I was like, that's a lightning bolt or like, that's a palm tree. And now I'm like, does this flow well? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so different, but I like to think to myself that if I hold these materials and channel it into my work, that energy or intent that I'm trying to do, it will translate and contrast to these very slick, smooth, hyper flat paintings that I'm making, you know?
So, and that is kind of what I want to talk about is how do you characterize the work that you do? You said hyper flat.
Yeah.
I don't think of you as a realist in a traditional sense, mm-hmm. but there is this notion of a almost like a magical realism in mm-hmm. some of your work because of some of the colors and the color blocking that you do.
Yeah.
It does remind me of Manet or something. You know, there's elements of that are thrown in there. Mm-hmm. But then I'm also, you know, you're stacking all of these images to create mm-hmm. these. You know, at times, you know, the inclusion of the dogs or the cars and mm-hmm. the crashes that exist in some of the work, too. Mm-hmm. It's maybe it is a kind of dystopic or like a nightmare. Like, yeah, I guess.
I can see that.
Like, how do you classify, talk about the work?
So to people who study art history or know art very well, like two of my biggest influences is Alex Katz and Matisse, like in the canonical sense. So I started doing these paper cutout collages because I was asked to be in a show so long ago, but I was too poor to ship any of my paintings. So I was like, I have to mime my work, but in a shippable way. So that's how the paper cutouts came along, because I knew Matisse did these cutouts, but he was like bedridden and old, you know? For me, it came out of function. And then I loved it so much because it was like, I definitely don't classify my collages as sketches or like throwaway works. Like, I do hold them precious to me. They're part of my practice, like painting, but they're just like a different capacity. And this whole layering system came from, I think, this like subconscious knowledge of screen printing. So in undergrad, I used to screen print. So if you look at my paintings, it shows a lot of these influences of like why I like flat or like why these colors or like why this system. So like when I was working on my screen print with these guys at Pop Inked, and they can dissect my paintings really well. Like, they understand the layering system, which is like a really funny conversation to have because I'm used to talking to painters. And then, so that's like how it came aesthetically. And I low key feel like the flatness came because like I grew up in the 90s when cartoons and colors were rampant. Like, they're insane. Like, Ren and Stimpy was insane. And then Courage the Cowardly Dog. So cartoons definitely influenced the flatness. This idea of like, how can I depict stories or emotion or anything through these shapes. Like, that's what cartoons are. And if you remember like the packaging of candy in the 90s, like, they were insane. They were like hot neon colors. I'm trying to think, like, Bubble Jug. Do you remember Bubble Jug?
No.
Oh my god, dude, it was like, do you remember Bubble? No. Oh, maybe it's just whatever.
Maybe it's a something thing. I don't know.
It's like, it was like a thing that was like hot pink and hot green, and it was powder, and it came in this like little jug, and you like pour it into your mouth, and your saliva creates it to be gum. I don't know. It's really bad for you, but
it's not good.
Yeah, no. A lot of these things weren't. But so I think like the way I was raised, especially like with my parents, like Korean is like the whole Korean heritage was something I really fought for the longest time because I wanted to be like an American, like whatever the fuck that meant to me, you know? And so there's like this traditional spiritual temple painting pattern that happens in Korea called Tancheong. So if you look at the colors of Tancheong, that is the colors that I pull from. So people associate a lot of my like paradisal colors, these like pastel colors, these like really beautiful lush colors as West Coast based. But Tancheong usually is based around like this very specific hue of green, orange, black, red, blue, yellow. They're beautiful. And then they interlay these patterns to create the sense of space. Like, you know, like churches are built to make you feel small. And I think that's like a really good telltale sign, the difference between like East with a capital E and West with a capital W. But so my parents had a lot of this patterning growing up. And so I think just looking at that every day, plus like Bubble Jug and plus like cartoons, it just like all spills out when I grew up. And the more I make work, the more I can see how these things had influenced me indirectly. Also, I feel like I'm not answering your question.
Oh, you are, man. Okay. No, no, I am so happy. First of all, I love listening to painters because painters are poets, and poets learn from painters.
Oh.
And so, yeah, just the, you know, that aesthetic mashup is really beautiful and profound and incorporates, you know, kind of the mundanity of something as disposable as some gum and something as sacred and reverent as, you know,
the thing.
Church. Yeah.
Yeah,
or
the
you
temple
know,
painting.
Temples,
yeah. And it's like crazy because, like, oh no, like, I had this conversation with someone recently and, like, I'm not white. But I would safely say I'm like still the world is built to me because I'm like man, so that's at least half the handicap, right? But it's kind of like there's this expectation that if you're not a straight white male and you're an artist that you have to make work about your difference, and I feel like that's way too, that's not fair to ask people, like people of color or anyone that's not the norm is not obligated to make work about their difference.
Facts. Yeah,
yeah, dude, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
And so I think just like that is something I fight with myself, but also at the same time, like I was raised with immigrant parents. And so that's always going to come back up. So something that I deal with every day in my practice is just kind of like, how do I happily marry who I am, what I am, where I came from, but also speak to the contemporary pulse of what the fuck it means to be an American today. Like it's so different, you know, like, I don't know, like this is side tangent. They're rebooting Gossip Girl. I like read this. Anyway, they're rebooting it.
I watched that.
Yeah. Sexy as fuck. But anyway, they're rebooting it. But I remember one of like the comments they pulled from the guy who's rebooting it was that it will be queer and POC-led oriented. And I was like, this is great. This representation needs to exist. But also at the same time, it's like when you say it that way, it almost doesn't feel sincere. Do you know what I'm saying? Just like cast a fucking POC and queer.
Right.
And just
don't talk about it. Yeah, you don't
there.
Need a
like,
fucking medal.
I can see it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, ah, oh, that's not Blake Lively. You know, that's a brown person. Like, I can feel, I don't know.
Yep.
And that's why I feel like it's just strange today. Like, there's this weird, like, oh, fuck, my difference is who I am. But it's also like, no, dude, we have a lot of shared experiences. You know, like, we don't have to keep marginalizing ourselves from each other to make, like, your heritage very unique to you and my heritage very unique to me, you know.
Well, and there is a strategy, I think, of the folks who hold the center to who hold power in the center to use identity as a way to fracture what could be solidarities across different ethnic groups, you know. And I think as opposed to, you know, thinking that is you know, that our identities are our superpowers as opposed to things that divide us, but the things that inform who we are as people, and that, you know, your differences are what makes you dope in part, as well as your own experience and your own processing of those experiences. But they shouldn't be what limits our engagement with one another.
Yeah, and
you know?
I think like all of this thing that we're talking about right now ties back into my interest of seeing how people decompress or like how they want to have fun. That's fucking universal, dude. That is not unique to like race, religion. It's not like people deserve to relax, right? And like think about the channels and the arenas that we want to have fun in. You're going to see a shit ton of different people there. Like, it's not like this is a place for white people and this is a place for Asian people, you know, like, and that's, I think, byproduct of my interest as an artist. It's like, dude, if there are spaces that exist that feel safe for the most part, and there's a shit ton of different people in it, we can expand as human beings and really be empathetic to each other. Right. It should not be the worst thing that makes us better people. Right. And I think that's like byproduct of like me going out and shit, or like, I don't know, the older I get, the more it's like, oh yeah, it's hard to make friends. But then you're like, no, it's not harder to make friends. Your standards just get higher, you know?
The best parties are always where everyone is in attendance.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah. When the host is actually nice, instead of like you go to a function and then like there are cliques of circles and you're like, all right, where do I go?
Yeah.
It's like everyone needs to intermingle. Like that's how you have a sincere time.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that's why being a house kid in Chicago, you know, you got a sense
sure that
like,
cool.
And you got a sense that everyone, that's what made it ill, is that everyone was there and they didn't look like you, or they did look like you, but for the most part, they didn't look like you. And you just, there was something about the vibrancy of that space because there was an energy to people not really knowing one another, but vibing together.
And
that really,
and you remember it, right? Because it's like, it's just like, I wonder what it'd be like if those moments existed in such a common level. I wonder if living would take on a different meaning if every interaction and moment you had was actually fulfilling. Like, then what is the aspiration at that point? You know what I'm saying? And I feel like when everything is fulfilling, things change so much because you're not chasing it anymore. It's just happening. So if someone takes on the idea of like, I want to be a better person, then it's contagious. The person you interact with is like, oh, that person's dope as fuck. I want to be dope as fuck. And so it'll like spread. And I think that's how you can make a really, really strong, vibrant, creative community. Like, you really can. Like, these things have to overlap. Like, poetry is cool. I'm fundamentally bad at writing, but I do appreciate the visuals that come to my head when I read it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that's the cool thing, right? So like, if like mediums can cross collaborate, people can also cross collaborate, you know? And so.
No, big facts.
Yeah. That was a long tangent.
No, I love it. So let's talk about Smoke and Honey.
Yeah.
Yeah. What can people expect to see inside the gallery at Vertical?
The shit is pink and gray. Yeah. So Patrick and I painted the gallery left quadrant to be pink and the right quadrant to be gray.
Why?
Conceptually, I wanted to mime feelings of Honey and Smoke, right? So to backpedal, that show title came from when I was thinking about how to articulate all of the shit I just told you in like a title. And I'm like, fuck. But there's this phrase, you know, like bees to honey. So like bees are attracted to honey. And that stands for like, oh, we want to surround ourselves with the things that are attractive to us. Like that's like our one life goal. And then on the flip side, scientifically, to get more honey, you have to smoke out the bees. So it kind of like makes that sentence super aggressive, like, or like, to get the things you want, you're going to have to be aggressive, which I think is kind of strange. Like, all right, so to get this, I got to be a shitty person, dull their senses, and then take their shit. Does that make sense? It's kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's like a colonization or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But so imagine those two sentences and like, okay, they flip flop and they mean two very different things. So that's what the title came from, was Honey and Smoke. Mm. And I was thinking about sweet things, shitty things, thinking about this like conflict between people or inside of people of like internal desire, external desire. So sweet and bad. And so I proposed it to Patrick when he was asking about install and shit. I was like, I would like one half of the space to be beautiful with more violent works, and I want one half the space to be a little bit more darker with maybe more prettier works. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like contrast, like very low-key contrast. But I've always been a big fan too of like changing space. Like, I don't know, white cube, white gallery is also another form of colonization, you know, like if white is a standard, whereas like my only job as an artist is not to make the damn paintings. Like, I want to be accountable for everything, right? How it's presented, how it's shown, the title,
experience of it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I want to be held accountable for manifesting these ideas. And that's why I'm really into representational painting. Like, abstract, I feel like it did a really good thing for the long road of art. But at some point, I feel like you give too much power to the viewer and you're not held accountable for what you're producing in the world. Like, especially when I see the titles, like Untitled 36, I'm like, cool, dude. All right, now what am I supposed to get from
Thanks.
This?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so...
Well, it to me, sometimes it mm-hmm. shows a lack of consideration for the viewer, for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of what you're saying is about ensuring that the experience for anyone walking into the gallery, mm-hmm. viewing your paintings, is something that is accessible. Maybe it's not immediately understandable. Mm-hmm. There's layers and layers, yeah. but you're giving them at least yeah. some framework, some instructions mm-hmm. in which how to view.
Yeah, and that's like really important to me, right? Like, I don't want to make anyone who sees my art feels dumb. Like, I think that's fucked up, dude. Like,
pretentious. That's the worst yeah, of the art yeah, world, or the yeah. worst of like any art.
Right. And like, that's why I love pop music. Like, pop music is like the truest form of art to me in practice, because like these people, yeah, like they make bops, they make whatever, but they're very good at it. The intent is making them for people. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, all right, music is this ever flowing thing. But like, when someone makes a fucking banger, like, I Want to Dance with Somebody by Whitney Houston is one of my favorite songs, because people have a fucking physical reaction to that song. And I'm like, a human being made that song. That's the craziest part, right? Like, you go to any bar or club and that song comes on, people turn the fuck up. And I'm like, wow, Whitney Houston, a human being, created this that resonates so much with people because it has some importance in their life. And I'm like, if my paintings can do that on the smallest level, that'd be fucking sick, you know? But like, I guess to expect for the show is kind of like, there's 5 paintings, 18 collages, and 2 prints. And so 23 of my works, and then two prints that are made with pop inked, and we just finished installing and curating the show. It looks very beautiful. I don't really want to give away too much, but
Mercedes Zapata is in the building. Mercedes, great to see you.
Hi, I'm David.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you guys have never met?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, Mercedes is an incredibly talented photographer.
Oh, cool.
Excited for you to get to know her work. I want to ask you about the vases and kind of where that comes from. I love these pieces that
Thanks,
you do,
dude.
Which is, almost like, you know, in high school, we got like the poem that's trotted out all the time is like the Ode to the Grecian Urn or whatever the fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are like flipping and, you know, signifying on top of this vase that is not necessarily Grecian, but reminds me of some of what you would see at the Art Institute.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come to kind of begin to draw on that classic?
So my parents had a shit ton of traditional Korean ceramics in their house, and all of these ceramics told stories. Like, that's what I mean, they're functional objects, but every culture aestheticized it, like Grecian, Asian, like think about any fucking culture, and this thing that is a functional object usually holding water or wine, I mean, it was a surface to tell stories. I'm like, all right, that hasn't changed, I can totally fucking do that. So that's like really where it came from, was like, this is a good opportunity. Historically, people are interested in telling stories. That has never changed. So can I take this intent and tell stories that I want to tell that I've like deciphered? Like all that shit I told you earlier is like me unpacking and like trying to like, imagine you went out and you like had a good time, bad time, whatever. Like everyone knows what the highest points and the lowest points feels like. But the middle point is like what I want to pull a still from and make work about. And if I do it on a vase, then it's me wanting to tell that part of the story, right? And so that's why I don't really care about like culture. Like, there's no such thing as cultural appropriation. Like, dude, the canon is mine. Like, people like me did not exist in the canon.
Yeah.
And so Grecian vases are great because, I mean, as a form, it's beautiful. It's like so beautiful. Like, and so I was like, okay, I mean, I'm a visual based person. It's very aesthetic shit. I'm gonna take this. All right, I like this aspect, or I need to talk about this because that was either super problematic or something that's not talked about, and present it on the vase. Like, that was like my one-to-one thinking. And then it's not important if people get it right away. That's where all the animals have been coming in, because I love painting people, but at some point, like, I don't want to be didactic, dude. Like, I was like, can I create a lexicon of animals to represent the types of people I see, right? So, like, as a little clue, like, obviously tiger is gonna be my shit, but it's also standing for the idea of the exotic, with like air quotes. And then with these dogs, like, I perceive the U.S. to be predominantly a conversation of white and black, right? So when you see dogs in my work, it's usually my standing of like black identity and white privilege. So these are like the lexicons that I'm creating. And I was like, all right, can I take this moment that I saw and break it down into a metaphorical story and present it on a vase or on a shirt inside of a painting? Because then it's cool, because like, I can make a painting inside of a painting that is a painting. I'm not limited to just one painting. So
yeah, those pieces, particularly with the animals, I feel like are very emotional. There's a lot of feeling in there.
Mm-hmm.
As Mercedes gets you eating the ice cream. I've only seen the vases in 2D. Any thought to 3D?
Low-key, I'm experimenting, but I just got to do it in a way that's like good to me. I don't know. I feel like I get that a lot, where it's like, we'd love to see this shit in three-dimensional form. And I'm like, but why? You know? So if I did do it, I want to do it in a way that like makes sense. You know, it's not because like 1 + 1 = 2.
No, sure.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, I am excited for the show at Vertical.
Thanks, dude.
We will be there on Saturday. Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday, 6 to 9.
6 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to come out the Tuesday after the opening. So Vertical Gallery is, what's the address?
I don't know the number, but it's on Western.
Yeah, Western and Augusta.
Mm-hmm.
and a Vertical Gallery is very accessible, open. Mm-hmm. The show, I already know just from knowing your work and seeing a little bit that you've dropped online, this is going to be a very powerful experience.
Thanks, dude.
I'm so excited for it, man. again, one more time before before we get out, where can people find you on socials?
DAVHEO. That's my AG thing. I don't really have any other social handles, though.
So. Great. And yeah, make sure you get out to Vertical Gallery to see this show. It'll be up for, what, 4 weeks or so?
3 weeks. It closes on the 28th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, yeah, man. Excited for folks to see it. And Dave, thank you so much for being in the Cornerstone.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a good conversation. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Shout out our super producer, DJ Cash Era. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official corner store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the snack door, Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the corner store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The corner store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.